Welcome to the podcast Benzo Tired. I'm your host, Neftel Benesty, and I'm Dutch. Join me on my journey into the world of benzodiazepines, withdrawal, bind, and more. Disclaimer, always consult your physician for medical advice. This is episode 24, Mieke Janssens, and today it's July 17th, 2023. On July 17th, 2023, I spoke to Mieke Janssens from Belgium. Mieke got exposed to benzodiazepines through alternative ways, the party scene, and online. Mieke used benzos initially to sleep, but later on used them to be sedated. Mieke used high dosages of lindormin, which is brotizolam, and dormicum, which is midazolam, Versed, or Hypnovil. When she experienced severe symptoms and interdose withdrawal, she contacted her doctor who switched her to 90 milligrams of Valium, which is diazepam. Mieke shares her entire story, including her taper and jump, which was about 2.5 months ago. When she realized there was a lack of proper guidance on how to safely taper in her country, she decided on being a coach to help using her lived experience. During her taper, Mieke sought psychological help to deal with her underlying issues. I think this episode is interesting for people who specifically who got their benzos online and not through a prescription of a doctor. Hi, Mieke. Welcome to Benzo Tired.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. Could you share with the audience your first exposure to a benzodiazepine?
Well, my first exposure to benzodiazepines was I used to party a lot. And to get to sleep at night, it was after party, it was kind of hard. So, some friends introduced me to benzos and so I could sleep. Mm-hmm. And that was a very useful tool at the time. But then after a while, it for me, it became... it became a tool to not feel stuff. I'm very emotional, but I've never learned how to deal with emotions. So when there was something big happening in my life, like something where I felt bad about, I started taking them to not think too much at night, because I kept myself awake thinking. Mm-hmm. And so I took benzo to be able to sleep even without a party.
But a question here then. So in the party scene, would you get several kinds of benzodiazepines? Did you know it was a benzodiazepine? Was it one singular kind of benzo that you took?
Well, at the time, in the beginning, it was just what my friends could offer me, because I didn't have them myself. So it was... And then I went to my doctor. I explained why I needed them, why I wanted them. My doctor gave me a box, like every 6 months I got a box or something, so I could. And that was always one kind.
And can you remember what kind of benzos you were on during your party kind of era?
The one my doctor prescribed me was like I don't know the. I only know the brand name. It was lindormin, but I don't remember what the active substance of it was, actually. So it's only the brand name.
Okay, so you got prescribed lindormin, which is brotizolam. Wow, I've never heard of that. And I'm guessing a lot of the audience members, listeners, won't be aware of that either. Okay, so that was the benzodiazepine your doctor prescribed you.
Yes.
So at least you did go to the doctor. Like, I have a problem with benzodiazepines, and I'm guessing you wanted to come off and you sought help for that.
No, at the time I just wanted the doctor to prescribe me so I could go partying and sleep after.
Okay, fair enough. And how was your doctor? He was like compliant? He was like, sure.
Actually, my doctor, my old doctor, he didn't see a problem with it. But then he retired and I had to find a new doctor. And the first time I asked my new doctor, it was like, she gave me a pamphlet for a psychologist. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what the fuck? But afterwards, now I'm like, okay, this was a really healthy reaction of her. Mm-hmm. To give me a pamphlet to get mental health for my mental state. And But that I convinced her that it was only for partying, and eventually she gave me the prescription, but that was like one box every 6 months or so.
Okay.
So, but then later on, I was like, this was the end of 2020, I think. There was some very annoying stuff happening in my life. And I was, depressed is a big word, but I was feeling really bad and there were a lot of emotions and I couldn't deal with them. And so I started ordering benzos online because all I wanted to do was sleep, actually. I just didn't want to feel what I was feeling. And
you wanted to be numbed.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I just wanted to escape the emotions and the feelings because I didn't know what to do with them. So I started ordering online. I started looking for them online, and it was actually quite easy to find them. So I started ordering temazepam and midazolam. So those were the ones that I started taking then.
Yeah. And for the audience, when we had our vetting call and you said the midazolam, which brand name is Dormicum, I had that one for like 2 days. It made me suicidal. And I had no clue that it was a benzodiazepine. And the Americans will properly know this drug as Versit, which is used a lot in hospitals. So yeah, it will knock you out for sure. So yeah, go on.
Yeah, definitely. That did the trick. In Belgium, you can't get it in Belgium because it's only used in hospitals. It's used to people who are so sick that they're dying, like the last care. It's used, if I'm not mistaken, for to put animals to sleep when they want to have when they need surgery. But you can't get it as in a pill form here in Belgium. Mm-hmm. So I ordered it from a Dutch site. Most of those sites were Dutch. And it did the trick. It knocked me out completely. So I took, it started at 1 at night, but then after a while it was 2 at night, 3 at night, but it was it's really heavy stuff. Mm-hmm. And then when I woke up in the morning and I thought it was too early and I was like, oh no, the day is going to be so long. I don't want to face my issues. So I took one in the morning to sleep some more. And then, but after a while, it's a very strong benzo, but it's really short acting. Mm-hmm. And it didn't take me long to develop intradose withdrawals. I took them at night, I took them in the morning, and in the afternoon I was already shaking and feeling terrible. So I started taking them at noon too, to just sleep all day, all night.
Right. And this is ongoing whilst you have the prescription drugs from your doctor,
I didn't take them anymore, those prescription.
Okay. You were just getting them online.
I was, getting everything online.
Okay. Then what happens?
That went on for like 3 months or so. But I was also taking, I have a lot of back problems. And I was also taking heavy painkillers like opioids. And so I was combining the opioids with the very heavy benzo use.
Right.
And one night I was like, I still haven't decided. I still don't know if it was a panic attack or it was something worse. But all night I couldn't breathe. I was just scared I was gonna die.
Well, you could have, because it is a dangerous combination.
It's indeed a dangerous combination. So, so I don't know if it was really something like where I could have died from, or it was just a panic attack. I have no idea, but it could have been both. Like it was a really dangerous moment.
I think we can say that you were not in a good place at the time.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And that scared the hell out of me. So during that night, I confessed everything to my girlfriend because she didn't know. I was doing it without her knowledge. I confessed everything to her. She stayed with me all night because I was freaking out so much. Mm-hmm. And we discussed that I had to call the doctor because my doctor didn't know anything either. Mm-hmm. So in the morning, I called my doctor. I was just crying my eyes out. I called my doctor and she was very surprised, of course, because by that time I took like 100 milligrams of midazolam a day.
Oh my goodness.
Which is like, I think if you, it's the 1.33 multiplier, so I think it's like 130 or 140 milligrams of diazepam, the equivalent.
Wow.
But my doctor was like, okay, I'm not here to judge, I'm here to help. So that was really cool of her, actually. So she, but she confessed that she didn't have a lot of experience with benzo addiction and dependency.
Withdrawal and stuff. Yeah. Okay.
So she said she was gonna, make some calls and talk to some specialists, some people who knew more of her than her. And then she called me back and said, "Yeah, come over. I have a plan for you." So I went there, and she, this addiction specialist had told her to switch me to diazepam. Mm-hmm. It's mostly done, but in one time. So
a switchover, not a crossover. A switchover,
A switchover. So one day I stopped the midazolam, and then the day after I started the diazepam.
How much Valium or diazepam did you get?
90 milligrams.
90. And how was that switchover?
Actually, I was very lucky because I don't remember having a lot of problems. I was in a bad place, in a bad state already, so I don't really remember that it got worse. Mm-hmm. So I was very lucky because that could have been a totally different story. To be honest, I don't remember a lot from those first few months because 90 milligrams of diazepam, I was like a zombie. And it's all very blurry at the time.
That's okay. We all have that. Well, at least, you know, like me, I come from high dosages as well, and I have total gaps in my memory as well. I try my best to gather them and recall them, but yeah, we get it. So, okay. So you start your taper withdrawal on 90 milligrams of diazepam / Valium. And at the same time, were you kind of informing yourself on what benzos were, or is that later in your journey?
No, at the I was already looking all over the internet to find all the information I could get, because I've been looking into detox facilities. I had been looking into what withdrawal symptoms were, what I could expect.
And what did you find? What were your findings? Did you find the Ashton manual first, or something else?
No, the Ashton manual I didn't find myself. I found a lot of forums and a couple of Facebook groups. Mm-hmm. And there was, I read a lot of Wikipedia stuff and so the basic lists of what the withdrawal symptoms are. And I did find a lot about that. Mm-hmm. But my main find was a Facebook, a Dutch-Belgian Facebook group, which I joined immediately, and where they had lots of information. They also, I always say, they saved me, because my doctor originally gave me a 10-week taper plan for the
10 weeks
milligrams.
For the 90. Oh my goodness!
10-week
okay.
taper plan. It was like minus 10 every week, and then stop. And then the last 2 weeks were like going to 10, going to 5, and then stop.
Oh my goodness! Okay.
But I think day one, even before I even had the diazepam, I found this Facebook group, Benzo Striders, and they...
Which means Benzo Warriors in
Warriors,
English.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's fine, it's fine.
And they, they explained to me how about hyperbolic tapering and how you should not do more than 10% every 2 weeks. So I went to my doctor with that plan, and at first she was like, no, that's going to take too long. And I was like, yeah, but this is my body. This is my, ultimately, it's my decision.
Yeah, it should be patient-led. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And then, she was going with it. It didn't take a lot of convincing, actually.
Okay.
So she was fine with it. And because she's the one who had to prescribe. So if she would have said no, I would have been...
It would have been fucked, yeah.
Yeah.
okay, so you start at 90. You find the Facebook group, and you find the information on strategies to taper. And how did you taper? Did you do like a 5% cut or 10%? And how many weeks would you do that?
The advice I got in the Facebook group was 10% every 2 weeks, but I felt better with 5% every week. So the step was a little small, a little bit smaller. And I think I could pull that off because I didn't have, it was, the taper was not fun, of course, but my symptoms were manageable. I think if you react heavily on the steps, then you need those 2 weeks to stabilize. But I had enough other 5% a week, actually.
What were your symptoms during the taper?
Terrible fatigue. I remember at a couple of points, I was like, if I have to feel like this for another week or another month, I don't want to go on anymore. I was so tired all the time.
Were you sleeping?
Yes, I was sleeping. I was fortunate to I have slept through my entire taper.
Oh my gosh.
I was
a lot of
very
people are
lucky.
Gonna be jealous. A yeah, lot of people are gonna I know. Be jealous. Okay. So that's interesting. So 5% a week, and this is, did you ever pause? Did you ever hold, or did you just kept on going?
I kept on going. I don't think I ever took an extra week somewhere. No.
Okay. No. And how would you manage to do so with a 5% reduction on, like, in the lower regions? Like, did you do a scale or water titration? Or
I was lucky enough that I live in Belgium. Here in Belgium, we can we have compounding pharmacies.
Right.
So my doctor just prescribed. I made a list of my doses, like 4.351, and then like three digits after the comma. I went to my doctor. She prescribed me, and my pharmacist made the capsules with the right doses for me. So I didn't have to shave off, and I didn't have to weigh. It was all done for me.
That sounds like bliss, and you wouldn't have to pay. And you wouldn't have to pay extra for that.
Yeah, it was. I think it was extra. It was not cheap, but I gladly paid the extra money to not have to deal with the shaving and the weighing and the.
Fair enough. Okay, and how were your kind of like last weeks till the jump? How did that go? And how did the jump go?
Well, the last week still jump were like, you get so impatient, like you want it to be over with. Like I tapered for 2.5 years, and it was like, I just had enough of it. But I kept going like on the normal pace. And it just got better all the time. I was like more alert and more... aware of the my surroundings and my life and my body,
right.
and everything was more clear.
Right.
And the jump, I jumped 2.5 months ago.
Congratulations.
And you're like, when you're looking forward to that jump, I've been looking forward to that jump for more than 2 years. And it was like, you expect it to be this big, big thing. And then there's the jump and nothing really changes.
Yeah, I've heard it's very anticlimactic when you do that.
It's so like the only thing you don't have to do anymore is take that little pill at night, but it's not like you feel different or you...
Right,
it's
right.
Just, yeah.
So you jumped 2.5 months ago, and
yes.
And how are you feeling now? Have you... noticed more improvement, or it's kind of like it already was improved?
Oh, it was already improved, and there's still some lingering symptoms. Like I've been suffering from headaches and migraines for 2.5 for the last 4 or 5 months, I think. I'm now on day 12, I think, of migraines in a row, and. Yeah, there's the concentration and the memory is still not what it should be, and I tend to get overstimulated very easy. The morning anxiety is still the same as it was when I was tapering. So it's actually a bit the same as during the last months of tapering. It's not really bad. I'm lucky. I'm
right.
Very lucky. I know that. It's not really bad, but it's not great either.
Right, I get it. So, in your whole journey of tapering and n noticing that you had become dependent, when did you really learn about benzodiazepines and what they really do and how they act and stuff?
Yeah, I started on day when I found the Facebook group. That's the moment I started learning more about what kind of poison they were and what they can do and what they are
Right.
and I started digging in at I think at, on day one. I'm the kind of person who wants to know everything. So if I'm dealing with something, I want to look it up, and I had the same with benzodiazepines. I would just wanted to know as much as I could.
Right.
And so I started with learning in the Facebook group and then interacting with the administration, with the administrators there. And then after a while, I became a moderator in the group. And then after a couple months later, I joined the administration team. So I started helping others and looking up information for other people, not just for myself. So I tried to learn as much as I could, actually.
Okay. And what made you decide to become a taper coach or benzo coach?
After a while, I was because I followed a lot of therapy during my taper. I went to therapy just to learn how to deal with emotions, to fix the underlying problem. And everywhere I came and everywhere I looked, I found people who could help me with that, but nobody really knew what tapering was and what withdrawal symptoms were and what to expect and how to deal with those. And it just was very difficult to find somebody who could understand, who was willing to try to understand. So there was this really, this complete lack of people who understood what I was going through. And that frustrated the hell out of me, because you want somebody to talk about it. You want somebody to say, like, I acknowledge that these things are from tapering, and this is how you can try to deal with these things. Like, my doctor would always say, no, it's not from tapering. It's like, yeah, the headaches is from, I don't know. At one point, I had this short bursts of panic when I was standing on top of the stairs, and it was like, there's this panic coming over me, like, I'm gonna fall. And it only lasted like 30 seconds or so, and then it was gone. I told my doctor, and she was like, oh, you have a panic disorder. And I was like, no, it's from tapering. And she was like, no, I'm writing your file that you have a panic disorder. And I was like, I need somebody who can tell me, like, no, it's normal, it's from
Who will not
tapering. And
gaslight you? Yeah, because gaslighting is such a big deal in our community. Unfortunately, that this happens to almost all of us, being mislabeled, misdiagnosed, and gaslighted. So that's horrible.
Yeah, the mislabeling is terrible indeed. Like the so I really missed that, somebody who could just understand what I was going through, or just say, like, okay, no worries, it will pass. It's just tapering, you're not going crazy. Or and since there was no one I could find, I when I got closer to when I was like a year out from my jump, I was like, I really want to do something for the people who are in the same boat as me.
Right. Totally get that. So one of my questions, I'm just very interested, because you're my first Belgium guest on the show. And we're basically neighbors in terms of countries, right? What have you learned about how big the problem is in terms of benzodiazepines in Belgium?
It's terrible. It's I don't know the exact numbers. There was this article in one of the renowned magazines not too long ago. It was like 5 out of 10 people take benzodiazepines regularly, but I don't remember the exact numbers, but the numbers
It's
were
a lot.
huge. It
It's
was
more than the average Dutch people. I also read that article. I'm just guessing here that there's really no place else that people can go in Belgium. Like in the Netherlands, there's not really a place where you can go with your benzodiazepine problem. In terms of like doctors and facilities, psychiatrists, I'm guessing it's no different in Belgium.
Yeah, I assume there are institutions where you can go, but they're more specialized in like drug or alcohol abuse or
right.
But for the medication stuff, it's really non-existent actually.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, there's a big gap. And I'm always happy when coaches come on because there's such a big need of them internationally. So thank you for that. So in terms of where can people find you?
They can find me on my website. It's back to balance coaching.be. I'm located in Herselt, that's in Belgium. But I do my taper coaching sessions online, so through Zoom meetings. So it's doable for everybody. I can't expect everybody to come and drive to my little village. So I do the Zoom sessions.
Right. I mean, I think most people do it that way. I mean, that's the gift of the internet that we get to do true. That. So if people are listening currently and they are in benzo withdrawal, what is the advice that you would like to give them?
Take it slow. Don't rush things, because if you rush things, it can take a lot longer for you to heal. And try to keep a level head. If you know that the things are from withdrawal, it's easy to start panicking if you think, oh no, I have this, there's something very, very bad going on with me. Like, I have a headache, I must have a brain tumor, because that's what the benzo brain tells you. Try to keep a level head and realize that it's from the tapering. It's from the poison you're trying to get rid of. It's not easy, but it's really important to keep realizing that it's all from the, and read as much as you can without panicking.
Yeah, definitely.
Because it's.
Yeah,
you read a lot of horror stories, and you have to be able to filter the horror stories out of the. Unfortunately, the reality is often a horror story.
Right. I think, you know, what is also very interesting about your personal story in terms of benzodiazepines, and I was thinking at some point maybe to do an episode on it, but, you know, now that I have you here, I think it's fascinating because what you said earlier is very true. You can just buy benzos online, at least in the Netherlands, and so in Belgium as well then. And I think that is like a big concern. We've got the designer benzos. I think there's a whole group of people, especially the party people, as you will, that are taking benzos, and they have like, I didn't know when I was prescribed by a doctor, but you know, those people really don't know. And I think what you did, so this is kind of my point, what you did, like fess up to your doctor and be like, hey, I've got a problem with benzodiazepines. That was the best thing that you could have done.
Yes.
Absolutely. So if people are listening and they're on some funky ass benzo that you haven't heard of or whatever, you're like, I'm partying and I got a benzo, and you become physically dependent, the best step would be to get informed and get to a doctor and ask for help. So I think you did really well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was the smartest move I could take. Is actually this whole benzo adventure, it was actually a good thing. For me, it was bad, of course. But in the end, I got off and I'm much stronger than I was before. I've really found the strength in myself to get over this, to work on my underlying issue. I can deal with emotions a lot better, but it's all because I took the decision. I decided to tell my doctor that I had a problem and get off the stuff.
Yeah. Good for you. Thank you so much for your time, Mika. And we'll be in touch.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
In the episode description, you will find the link to the website of Mika. It's currently in Dutch only. So if you would want to be in touch with Mika and you're not Dutch speaking, you can send an English email to her in the link that I also added to the episode description. Thank you for listening to the episode. Be well, be safe. Remember, it's not a race, and don't forget to subscribe and rate the show.